Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be taking a look at the landscape in investment trusts at the moment. We're going to be looking at the factors driving pricing in investment trusts. And to do that, we're very kindly joined by the Chief Executive and CIO of BRI Wealth Management, Dan Boardman-Westman. Dan, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Morning, Jonathan. How are you?
Yes, very well. Thank you. Thank you very much for being with us. So on the UK Investor Magazine podcast, listeners will be aware that we regularly have managers of investment trusts on and we discuss their trusts in detail. But what we're going to be doing today is we're going to be looking at the broader landscape out there for investment trusts here in the UK, what's driving prices and what we can expect in the year to come. But before we get into it, Dan, please would you be able to give us an introduction, first of all, to yourself as well as BRI, please?
Yeah, so I'm Dan, Chief Exec and of BRI Wealth Management. I've been in the industry for about 13 years or so. I actually took sort of a bit of a weird career path to get to where I got to. I came into the industry when I was 18, sort of straight from school, and then did all of my professional qualifications and then left for a year or so in 2017 to do a master's in business administration, and then returned and have been with BRI ever since. So we're a Midlands-based wealth management firm. We offer both financial planning and investment management. We've been in business for over 50 years now, which is quite impressive. We look after about £600 million of clients' assets, and that's predominantly invested in a combination of unit trusts, direct equities, and investment trusts also. So yeah, that's probably the non-boring intro to BRI and me.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So you touched on there that you're using investment trusts. And of course, we're going to be discussing investment trusts today. So it would be good to get, before we start going into the landscape for investment trusts, how BRI implement them and where they fit in to the portfolios of your clients.
So at the moment, they typically fit into sort of two broad buckets. One of those is REITs and one of those is alternative slash infrastructure. And it's pleasing that the UK market has got a lot of very good quality REITs and infrastructure investment trusts on it. And so we feel they add a lot of value to client portfolios. And these are typically underlying assets that either you can't access in an open-ended structure like a unit trust, or you shouldn't, in our mind, really access. And so we think it just adds something different to the portfolio, increases diversification, and over the long term, increases returns as well.
Thank you. So I just want to touch on now, you know, the types of clients that you see investing in investment trusts, because, you know, once upon a time, it's very much an institutional professional area, but increasingly retail clients are investing heavily into investment trusts and looking at the shareholder registers of some of these investment trusts dominated by private clients. You know, how are you seeing that develop at BRI? And you're seeing a very strong demand from retail clients for investment trusts at BRI as well?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think there's a slight generational thing with investment trusts. I think older investors are a lot more comfortable and familiar with them, and where we maybe take on portfolios that people have been managing themselves of a sort of an older generation, they're usually stacked full of investment trusts. I think, however, with sort of maybe people below a certain age and the younger investor generation, I don't really think there's that. I think there's a lack of awareness about what investment trusts are and actually why they should be a large part of a long-term investor's portfolio. So we do see a lot of portfolios with a lot of investment trusts, but I think we'll probably touch on this. I mean, the investment trust sector has evolved a lot over the last decade, but there's still a lot of sort of how I would describe them as a sort of sleepy and subscale investment trusts that probably aren't right for most investors to be holding over the medium to long term. but actually we've had a lot of very good issuance over the last 10 years or so. And so some of the newer investment trusts that have listed on the market are really quite exciting, and especially at the prices they're trading at the moment.
Yeah, I think that's a good point to actually pick up on, Dan. You know, you've obviously mentioned there that there's, to some extent, legacy investment trusts there which aren't as interesting as maybe some of the newer ones. Would you be able to go into a little bit more detail about the types of these trusts and what the underlying assets are of, you know, first of all, those ones which are a little bit sleepy, as you describe, and those newer ones which are a little bit more exciting?
Yeah, I think typically the sort of older, sleepier ones are the ones that have been clearly around longer. And typically, they're tended to focus on their equity investment trusts. So they're investing in, you know, Asian equities or US equities or UK equities, whatever it is. And the trouble is, because either they're perpetually trading at discounts, not really just a sort of a factor of the last 18 months or so, and because maybe they haven't got the awareness as amongst wealth managers and private investors, they just remain a bit subscale, and sort of no real prospect of discounts closing unless there's some sort of corporate activity, which granted we have seen a bit more of recently. So I think how I would sort of view generally the investment trust sector is that there's probably quite a lot of smaller subscale equity investment trusts that, you know, we don't allocate to, and I would struggle to make a valid case to allocate towards them. But I think as you move up and sort of move into the investment trusts that are sort of probably north of £500 million in size, there's a few good equity ones, you know, Scottish Mortgage, you know, granted that's a bit of equity and a bit of private stuff. But there's a lot more of the alternative assets that, as I said earlier, really we think add quite a lot to investors' portfolio, A, from a diversification perspective and B, from a potential returns perspective.
Thank you. So you mentioned the discounts in investment trusts at the moment, Dan, and they're pretty significant across the board. It doesn't matter whether you're looking at a straight up equity one or one investing in private equity, for example, or infrastructure. There's some very big discounts out there. What do you see as the biggest driver for discounts at the moment, and what do you see as being a catalyst for these discounts to be alleviated going forward?
I think that's a very good question, and it is something that a lot of people are starting to ask or have been asking over the last 6 months, and there seems to be a bit more awareness around what is causing these issues. And in my mind, there's three main things. There's probably other things, but three main things. One is that I think M&A activity in the wealth management and discretionary fund management space doesn't help, because typically wealth managers have been large owners of a variety of investment trusts. And if you've got significant amounts of M&A, then you've either potentially got investment propositions changing, where they might not include investment trusts, or they might include different investment trusts, or where they own far too much of a particular investment trust. You know, they might own 25 or 30%, and then you get into liquidity concerns. So my gut feel is there's probably been some forced sellers from the wealth management space over the last 18 months, 2 years. I think another thing which is really unhelpful is the costs and charges disclosure around investment trusts, which you and many of your listeners may or may not be familiar with, but just to do with the PRIIPs regulations. And it basically means that investment trusts look really, really expensive, or most of them do, for investors. And because of annual costs and charges disclosures now by wealth managers, which, you know, we think are a good thing, it's a good thing to increase that transparency. But you've got some of these investment trusts where optically it looks like the costs are sort of 2.5% or 3% a year to own the investment trust, and it's not. And so I think you've probably, again, had a little bit of forced selling from people or wealth managers that don't want the hassle, to be quite honest, of trying to explain to someone why it says 3% cost or 2% cost and why it isn't in reality. So I don't think that's helped. I think the final thing, and is probably the most obvious, is just the general investing climate and economic uncertainty that we've had for the last 18 months. Interest rates have risen incredibly quickly. Inflation has been high. Pleasing to see that's falling. And economic uncertainty, along with geopolitical uncertainty, abounds. And I think this has all just led to a pretty toxic environment for investment trusts to operate in. I mean, when you add on top of that, the fourth reason I've just sort of thought of as well, is that whilst I think issuance of investment from investment trusts over the last 10 years has been good, there have been a lot of good new names that have launched on the market, there have been some ones that have burnt investors of late. You know, Home REITs clearly has not been the best for investors. Thomas Lloyd, again, few issues there at the moment. And then Hipgnosis, of course, has been in the press as well. So I just think there's a confluence of factors that is leaving investment trusts at pretty much the widest discounts that they've been at since the depths of the financial crisis. And it's a great opportunity. Well, that's how we view it anyway.
So just going back to these factors here that are driving the discounts, I mean, how much do you feel this is something to do with the sentiment around the UK at the moment, or is it something that's really representative of what's happening across the globe? And if you look at the growth figures here in the UK compared to other economies, particularly the US, for example, we're lagging behind there. Do you think there's a general contagion to some extent of the view of the UK economy and where that is, and that filtering through into the London listed investment trusts?
That's a really interesting question. It's one that I've not really thought about in the past. But what I would say is that the UK stock market at an aggregate level is cheap, you know, and it's been cheap since Brexit, really. There is a discount that's applied to the wider market. But interestingly, and I suspect if you were to run the numbers, for a lot of investment trusts, really up until the end of 2021, they were trading on premiums to net asset value, whereas traditional equities were still very cheap from a relative price to earnings perspective on the stock market. So I think there's maybe a little bit of sort of hesitancy and nervousness about the UK. But I think the large part of why we're seeing this discount is not that UK factor that does affect the rest of the rest of the stock market.
Yes, I mean, we were looking at a trust very, very recently, and it's a trust of the mega cap tech stocks, mm-hmm. Microsoft, Apple, Meta, Tesla, trading at a 12% discount,
yeah.
Which is, you know, in effect, you can go in and buy the world's biggest companies for 12% cheaper than they're trading on the market. So there is obviously many factors at play here. But I want to move on now, Dan, and look at, you know, the more illiquid assets and, you know, private equity, infrastructure, some forms of property, and look at the discounts there, because they are significant. And you might be able to bring in some of the cases that you're holding within your portfolio if you have infrastructure mm-hmm. Investment trust there. I mean, what do you think's driving this? Is it, you know, if we take UK infrastructure, for example, do you think that, again, this is around the pessimism around what's happening in the UK, or is it a valuation story that people are a little bit sceptical about what the underlying valuations are of these assets and how they're calculating the NAV within the investment trust? And of course, you know, that's particularly important for private equity. So, you know, these ones, you know, looking at some of them, 30%, 40% discounts to NAV. What do you think is happening there to drive these huge discounts in some of these trusts?
I think there is a bit of scepticism in certain sectors and more so in certain names about how maybe they're marking these assets to market. And I think thus you are seeing sort of quite wide discounts in areas where there's maybe not as much clarity over pricing, such as private equity. I mean, what I would say at the aggregate level is I think in property, definitely in most parts of the private equity space, valuations have come down over the last 18 months. I think if valuations had sort of stayed relatively stable, then you quite rightly have got to ask questions, because the world has changed immeasurably from a financial and economic perspective over the last couple of years. But most trusts have been pretty active at marking down the value of their assets from a property and an infrastructure perspective as well, with moving discount rates up. I think private equity is interesting, or slightly more interesting, because I think it is a bit murkier. And I still think there are lingering concerns over maybe private equity as an industry and how these things sort of get valued and marked to market. And as you say, that probably links in with why we are seeing some of the highest levels of discount in the private equity space. But, you know, even if the assets aren't worth what they say, you know, what they're marked at on average, you've got a big margin of safety at a 40, 45, 50% discount to NAV. You know, that is, you're buying assets for 60p in the pound. There's got to be a lot of pessimism or write-downs to get anywhere close to that level of write-down. And I think they just seem too wide. I mean, and that's just traditional private equity. If you go into the sort of the more growthy private market stuff, and there's, you know, there's a few trusts on the London market that are like that, you're looking at discounts of 50, 55, 60%. So what, one instance, I think it's 65 or 70% for a fund. And again, that is a huge margin of safety over the long term. You've got to make some pretty miserable assumptions for that margin of safety to be eroded over the medium to long term.
Thank you. Thank you. So, as you were speaking, Dan, there's another question which is sprung to mind, and this is probably more a question about BRI's approach, and it's a question about active versus passive investments. You mentioned there that you invest in unit trusts as well as investment trusts. You know, do you think that the move towards passive ETFs is having an impact on investment trusts, and how much weight do you put on the expertise of the active managers, and how are you using that within BRI?
The active managers on the investment trust side or unit trust?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And unit trust as well.
Yeah, I mean, look, passives have just dominated over the last 10, 15 years. And I don't think that's a trend that's going to abate anytime soon or diminish. And I think you've got investors now that are just starting to allocate either completely passively or looking at maybe the markets over the long term where it's been trickiest to outperform them, maybe America and other markets, and allocating passively. And I don't think this necessarily does do favours for the investment trust sector, especially when I think investors are increasingly cost conscious and investment trusts typically or can look quite expensive. So I don't think that does help a lot. But I genuinely believe, even if we weren't seeing the level of discounts that we're seeing at the moment, that having investment trust and sort of alternative asset exposure within a portfolio is beneficial to long-term investors. I mean, you just cannot really access property or infrastructure or whatever it is in open-ended funds or in passive funds properly. And, you know, we've all seen the statistics over the long term that investment trusts typically tend to outperform. Why is that? It's probably slightly to do with illiquidity premiums on the underlying assets and sort of more specialist asset classes. I think part of it is to do with good managers at the investment trusts. And part of it is to do with the ability to gear, clearly. Now, if you're a long-term investor and you've got, I don't know, 10, 20, 30-year time horizon, why wouldn't you want to have a little bit of gearing in an investment trust to boost your returns? I'd much rather own 110% of, you know, an asset class over the long term than maybe 95% in a unit trust, because, you know, they typically have to carry a bit of cash. So I think investment trusts... it's a great shame that I don't think investment trusts play as large a role as they should do in investors' portfolios. To be fair, that's not been a bad call over the last couple of years, given how far discounts have widened. But from where we are now, you know, I think investors, whether professional or private, whatever it is, should really be considering a decent allocation to investment trusts. There's some fantastic trusts trading at discounts that are just far too wide. And as I say, you've got to make some very pessimistic and miserable assumptions over the next 3, 5, 10 years, you know, to erode that significant margin of safety.
Thank you very much, Dan. So one question here that we're going to finish off with, I'm sure a lot of listeners to this will be very interested to hear your thoughts on, and it's any sectors. Of course, we've touched on various sectors here, and we've discussed the discount. So to some extent, you've already touched on this, but I want to finish off with this. You know, which sectors do you feel are at a point now where they're ripe for a sharp reversal in their discounts?
I think the biggest ones are infrastructure, property, and private equity. And I know we've talked about those, but they're large sectors, and I think they're important. I mean, just look at yesterday. I mean, we're recording this on the 3rd of November, so yesterday was after the Fed meeting, and of course we had the Bank of England as well. There were property investment trusts that moved 10% yesterday, just on the back of slightly more, I suppose, dovish expectations from a monetary policy perspective, and maybe some realization or hope that we're at the peak of interest rates and actually inflation is getting under control. Stuff moved 10% yesterday in one day. I mean, that it's absolutely crazy. And so I think property, where discounts are still 30-40%, and this isn't sort of offices or retail stuff, I'm really thinking sort of warehouses and industrial assets, or sort of student property, they're on big discounts, and I think that's very unjustified, and they will move tighter over time, especially as the underlying asset class is doing pretty well. I mean, rental growth has been very strong this year. I think infrastructure, I mean, discount rates have moved quite a bit higher, but actually some of these trusts are yielding sort of 7.5-8% on fully covered dividends. I think that's an attractive place to be over the next 10 years or so. And private equity as well, I think, just sheerly because of discounts being so wide, 40-50%, you might see a further write down in the NAVs, but nowhere near that much. So I think those three areas are probably ripe for discounts to close substantially over the next period of time. You know, this could be, well, it was a day yesterday, it could be a month, it could be a year, it could be a couple of years, but there's a lot of value there. And I think what's pleasing to see, well, sort of, it's a double-edged sword in my mind, is there's a lot of boards conducting strategic reviews. I think they're acutely aware of discounts and investor discomfort about them. There's a lot more private equity interest in terms of sort of buying investment trusts because they're trading at big discounts. We've got activist investors really starting to ramp up, you know, with AVI, and we've got Saba Capital, who I believe are raising a $500 million fund just to invest in UK investment trusts. So I think that's going to start closing discounts as well. So that's a good thing. The flip side of that, which I think is not necessarily good for the sector in the long term, is that you will see trusts get taken over, good trusts, and you will see the sector shrink and diminish in size, which would be a great shame for what I think is such a valuable sector for investors, and one which has so much rich history, especially in the UK.
Dan, thank you. Thank you very much. Just a quick note to listeners. If you are interested in investment trusts, do check out the video section and podcast section on the UK Investor Magazine website, because we do have regular interviews with UK investment trust managers, a broad range from private equity through to straight up equity, through to infrastructure. So do check out those sections, and you can listen to some interviews and get deeper insights into some of those trusts there. So Dan, thank you very much for being with us today.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me, Jonathan.
And thank you very much to everyone for listening. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember, all investment involves risk.